achieved. And I want to introduce first Matt Krashen, who is the director of Meany Hall. He's the one responsible for all the events that come to the campus and perform in this space. He's been a friend of the School of Drama for a long time, certainly as long as I've been here. And you may not get a chance to see him very often. He's a graduate of Yale Drama School and really does know a lot about our business. So it's a double pleasure to introduce Matt, who will then introduce momentarily.
I want to extend a personal thanks to the company. They really, by contract, didn't have to do this because they did a performance for children, sold out children's performance this morning, and then of course they're going up tonight. And I really appreciate their staying and taking the time to share some of their lives with you. I'd like to start by introducing Larry LePuff, who is the company manager. And I thought it would be the best way for you to find out a little bit about Momentchance would be to have Larry, who's been with the company for 9 years, tell you a little bit about the history of the company. and we've only got 45 minutes left.
Hello.
Right, so go ahead and take it.
Does anyone know what Momentchance is? We do all the things. So I'll just explain a little briefly about the show. It's a mind mask show. For the people who don't know, it differs from mime in the fact of the silence, the mask in the fact that the performers take the masks and manipulate them. And have a few concepts with them about life and love and whatever they feel or what they want to convey to people. This is the biggest problem we have when we're trying to explain the insurance. Most people think it's Marcel life is not, and it certainly isn't. The creators of the show, Andres Posard, Gloriana Frasetto, and Bernard Schurch, developed Momentchance in the early 70s. They came together after working, the two boys worked in the Jacques Lecoq School in Paris, which is a very famous school of movement and mass work. That's where they met. They're both from Zurich, Switzerland. They were from Switzerland. And the woman is an Italian-American who was born here in the United States and lived in Italy since she was 2 years old. And one time these two guys, after they completed their courses at school, Jacques Lecoq, I don't know what the name of the show was, I forgot, but it wasn't Momentchance at the time, and they were showing it in Rome, and that's where they met Gloriana Frasetto. And that's when they became the three together, and they started to form these new ideas together. After a few years, the old thoughts became more developed, and they decided to give the name Momentchance, which we say Momentchance means games of chance. If I remember correctly, basically it's a German name, that developed in the medieval times, where the players of cards, instead of, if they didn't want to show their faces, would put on masks. The word Momentchance comes together and it comes about. And Momentchance was just the name of the company, and it just developed into becoming a method of mind that Momentchance is the name of the company, the name of the show, and it's how we describe our thing. Momentchance. It's pretty honest, right? Anyway. I met these people in 1978, the creators, when we were coming to Broadway for their first time. Let me go back. Before they came to Broadway, there was a New York impresario that went out to Europe because a friend of his heard that there were these three people called Momentchance and they were very talented. So he went out there and saw them in 1972, 74, and he thought they were great. What he did is assign them right there to do some tours in the United States. The first year they came, I think they did four engagements. The next year they did 11. and they start to build until they decide they want to go on to Broadway for a limited engagement of 3.5 weeks in 1978. And it became so successful that they played there for 3.5 years in the same theater. During that time, they had to, of course, still go on national and international tours. And being that Broadway was a success, they needed to train another company. So the creators became directors, and the audition people to continue doing the Broadway show while they would continue doing the national tours and the international tours. So we now have two companies in 1978. Now, this was the first I'm talking about. What you'll be seeing tonight and what these performers are doing is the second show of Moonshine. I'm not talking about the first show of Moonshine. So they went on their national tour and international tour, and we had one Broadway company that kept on going. And it was so difficult to do this show, they needed to train another Broadway company. About 8 shows a week was too hard. So they had two companies doing Broadway engagements of 4 shows a week. And the creators were getting tired. They were doing the show very often, and they decided that they wanted to create a second show. So they also decided to train a third company, Moonshine, which would now do the national tours that they were doing and the international tours. So we now have 4 companies, 2 on Broadway, 1 that was doing international touring and national touring, and the 4th was for the creators who decided to stop touring and develop this show that you'll be seeing, the second show. Broadway ended, one of the companies folded, the other one went to Los Angeles. We had 3 companies. Finally, the Los Angeles company folded, and we had the creators who were creating the second show, and the international touring company which was touring the show that they created the first show. It ended in 1984, August 1984, August 31st, 1984.
He was there.
And on September 1st, 1984, the second show started with the creators doing the show in Switzerland. And so the first show ran for about 10 years, which is a pretty long time for the show to run. And it's now on the shelves, and it could run again. And they just don't want to do it anymore. They've grown 15 years, and they want to show themselves now with the second show. But it was a wonderful show, and I imagine in the next few years it might come back again. So it brings us up to 1984. The creators developed this second show, and it took them 2 to 3 years to do it, and they decided to now take it on the road. While we were on the road with the second show, there were incredible changes. Every day, something else was happening to it. It was very hard for everyone. It was exciting and hard, and doubly hard for the stage manager, people over there, Dino DeMaio, who was working on it, who had to be flexible with them because every night they decided to do something different. The choreography would change, they decided to throw something out, bring something in, so each show would have to change the light, and it was very difficult, but exciting. So after about 2 years of this, it was finally 99.9% ready for the show. It brought us up to our Broadway engagement, which started in June of 1986. And these creators went on to the Helen Hayes Theater in New York, and started there in June. And we were there for 5 months until October of 1986. And during that time, they auditioned other performers to take over their roles, because these performers here. And these performers worked very hard every day, 6 days a week, maybe 8 hours a day for at least 10 weeks so they would know their roles. It was an incredibly hard period of training, which they were going to finish. The creators now do not do the show anymore. The Moonshine show, the second show, is done by these performers here, and that's it. Maybe one time or another, the creators will do a show in Russia or East Germany, places that they've never seen before or never gone to before. But all the performances, now national and international, will be done by these 3 people. And I think I said enough. I'm going to introduce you to them. And this is Eric Beatty and Tina Cronus and Michael Rock, these performers of Moonshine. And we also have, before the beginning, we also have Donna Fisher, who is a backstage assistant and dresser, and Neil DeMaio, who is a freshman for Pico. And if there are any questions after, I guess we've all spoken, we'd be glad to tell you about life on the road.
Does each company only have 3 members?
Each company, the performers are only 3.
Okay.
And we can talk about a total of 7 people who are traveling. The 3 performers, the 2 backstage. One of them is not here because she's working on the costumes. She is the 2nd backstage assistant. We have Kiko, who does the lights, sets the show, does the lights, and myself, who takes them all over the road, making sure that they get there and everything involved in touring. So I think I might as well put it over to these 3 people who might be able to say something.
Do you want to go with questions? You want to just go with questions?
Yeah, what do you want to ask?
Yeah, what do you want to know? What do you want to know?
What are your back training?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm glad you asked that. Eric?
One interesting fact is that we're all much younger than the original company. And I think that surprised us in a sense when we noticed that we were, but then when we thought about it, we realized that they were also looking not only for certain backgrounds, but for people who, one, could get along for 3 or 4 years on their own, and two, who could deal with 5 or 6 shows, anywhere between 3 and 6 shows a week, as well as traveling, planes and trains and buses and all sorts of stuff. I went to college, took a few theater courses there, but did the Lecoq School as well, the Jacques Lecoq School in Paris for 2 years. It's a fantastic school for studying the essence of theater through movement. People always ask me, well, did you use your voice? And we did use our voice. And we would do improvisations and have skits and not confine ourselves to, there's really 3 schools in Paris. There's Marceau, there's Ducru, and then there's Lecoq. And I think Lecoq is the most oriented towards theater. And we would study rhythm, we would study relationship between 2 people and how they deal with the space on a stage, characters through physicality. We did materials, we did colors, we did music, all sorts of stuff. And then in the 2nd year, you studied clowning, commedia dell'arte, buffoons, the tragic chorus, a lot of things that are based in movement. And then I lived in Boston for 2 years, and then I auditioned last summer. I worked in Boston. Tina.
I am from Florida, where I studied dance and mime down there. And then I went to Florida State University for just a semester, and then transferred to New York University, where I was a theater major. And during that time, I studied a lot of movement and dance and along with the theater, because it's sort of, I don't know if you're familiar with New York University's program, but it's kind of experimental and a little weird. But so I went there, and during that time, I was in a few dance companies, and I also studied with Marcel Marceau, which is totally different from the sort of mime that we do in Mamachan. It's the classic, typical mime that you think of when you hear mime. And let's see. So yeah, I've had a lot of dance training and. Yeah, and I took 2 dance classes yesterday. And I was a street mime in New York. I used to do mime on the street. Like that until I landed this job in Moonshine.
Which was like the year after you graduated.
I graduated in June.
Oh. So you graduated in June and got the job in June. Nice.
We don't ever forget that.
Yeah, I graduated in June and got the job 4 years later. I went to Penn State, studied theater, got a degree in theater. went to New York, waited tables. No, actually, I didn't have to. I didn't do a whole lot of waiting tables. Let me go back and start again. I went to Penn State, degree in theater, took a lot of dance while at Penn State, danced in their student company, then went to New York, studied mime with Richard Morse, which is of the DeCru School, and did workshops with many other people, including circus training and theater, physical theater, physical comedy. Then did about 3 years of non-union stock and dinner theater and regional theater and children's theater. For almost 2 years, I did the Slim Good Body Health Show. Where I wore a one-piece unitard that had the parts of the body painted on the outside. And I sang, went to elementary schools and sang songs and told jokes and juggled and talked about how the body works. And that's what I did to keep me from having to wait tables in New York City. Because I, when I came out of college, was going to go, although I had always done movement theater or shows involved with movement, I went to where the work was, which meant I did a lot of musical comedy, and thought I was going to go the normal standard theater route, try to do musical comedy, try to do straight drama out of New York City. And to keep myself from having to wait tables, I ended up doing things like that in summer stock in outer Podunk, Pennsylvania, and what have you. And then after doing that for about 3 years of show after show and little waiting tables in between, we auditioned for this company in June, and we are now contracted for 2 years with an option on a third year.
What did the audition view system?
It was pretty intense, actually. The first thing they did was, I think we all sent pictures and resumes first, right? They announced in Backstage, the trade magazine, that they were looking for pictures and resumes for people to do the replacement company, and I sent mine as a fluke, actually, because I'd always admired Mum and Chance and had seen some of their productions, but it said in the audition notice, Lecoq training a must, and I did not have Lecoq training, but I had learned over the years that you send your resume to every damn thing you can. So I sent it in, and they called me because I had on my resume that I did acrobatics, that I had classical mime training, and that I had physical comedy skills. And they called me in for the audition. The audition was basically in four parts. First we did, they called in, what did they call in, 40, 60 people or something? 60 people they called in out of a couple of hundred resumes that they got. First was a group audition where Donna, who's also a dancer and dance teacher, put us through a dance class, movement class sort of thing, so that the original members could see what we did.
And that's when I thought that I was out of there. There was no way that I was in the cast. which is funny, because we really do have three different backgrounds. You know, Tina's out there doing her number. I'm going, oh God, there's no way I'm going to get hired. So the lesson is, you know, I mean, if you think, if you're at all interested in something, you know, send in your resume and go to the audition. You know, all three of us could easily have thought to ourselves, there's no way, you know, we won't get hired.
Yeah, so we did the movement dance class, and then they scheduled us for individual auditions where they wanted to see a prepared 3 to 5 minute piece, and then they had us do some improvs and some individual things. The character that I took over has to do some small acrobatic things, which they had to see if you could do. You had to be basically the same physical type as the original creators, because they didn't want to do major revisions on costumes. Eric is about the same height and build as Bernie, and I'm about the same height and build as Andres. Tina weighs about 80, 90 pounds more than Flo. No. So anyway, so we did the first group one and then an individual one. Then they cut from that. They cut to 20 or something and called us back for a second group audition where we did more of the same kind of group work. We did some Lecoq things on the second time. Andres took us through some Lecoq improv with, remember, we walked around and all that. You did a different one. And then we did yet a final individual audition from that where they had us improvise and work with the costumes themselves that are in this particular show. And from that, then they called. After, I guess it was like a 2-week period.
Talk about the 10 weeks of intense training that you had to go through to learn.
It was a pain.
I think the thing that struck me the most is people kept saying, or asking me, like people outside the company, well, did your training help, you know, and were you prepared for it? And there's no way that you can be prepared for Mumenchan. I mean, you can be prepared in the sense that it helps if you can balance, and it helps if you can do a backward somersault or whatever, you know. But ultimately, except for, there are a few acrobatic moves that Tina and Michael do, a few like a back walkover, what's it?
A limber.
And Michael stands on his hands a couple points in the show, but really the technicalities are few. It's the specificness of the role that you're learning and trying to deal with these costumes. In many senses, we're just manipulators. We're puppets inside of costumes. We're very...
Puppeteers
inside of the costumes, moving the costumes around in different ways, and there's different qualities of material. Some of the costumes are very heavy and large, and some of them are light and airy, and some of them are styrofoam and very tight on your body, and then others, well, for instance, at one point I hold a long rod and draw faces with a ribbon, and then in the second act we're changing our heads all the time. So you got to work up here, like we do masks up here, and you can't see when you're making the mask. Your hands just have to know that you're... We have two pillows, Michael and I, that you're making. You hope that what you're making is able to be seen.
Oh, do you hope? But now, our training did help us, I think, in the fact for things like theatrical timing, for knowing that someone's got the center of focus in a particular scene, and then the focus comes to you, and then you can take stage, you can do whatever the next action is, and then the focus has to go back. Or there are times when there's a pause and then maybe a take to the audience or something. I mean, our training definitely helped with that sort of thing. But the other thing that I found with this show is that this show, and I found it out mostly in rehearsal, breaks about every rule I learned in college. Just about every rule I learned in theater in college is broken by the show, and it works. It still works, which I guess there's something to be learned there somewhere. But the 10 weeks of rehearsal started at 10 o'clock in the morning with Donna giving us a movement class. And then we would work individually, usually an hour, each of us, with our counterparts. We'd take a break. Then we'd come back and work group pieces. And then after about the first 3 weeks, since our faces are never seen on stage, after the first 2 weeks, we started inserting individual pieces as they became ready. So after we had worked about 2 weeks, then we started doing the shows in the evening as well as rehearsing all day. So it really ended up, we were at the theater about 14 hours a day then. We had breaks certainly, but as we would work on a piece and as it became ready, they would insert it so that they would do all the show except for 3 pieces, and then they would do all the show except for 5 pieces until we had worked up to doing the complete show. And that's what the rehearsal process was like.
What is the background and the work that's done by the technicians of the show?
Kiko, do you want to take a stab at that?
Well, as Michael said a few times, I was teaching a dance. I was starting to be a dance major 15 years ago in Boston, and where I met one of the original Mumenschanz people. I was living in Switzerland for 15 years. I studied there to be a physical therapist, and I had a dance school as well, so I was always into both things. So what I do here is I kind of like Baryshnikov would have a physical therapist backstage to, you know, if someone works their body, overworks it or something, I give them a massage or things like that. I teach taught the kids how to work economically because some of the costumes are very heavy. Tina has a real heavy costume, and to teach, to just show them, you know, a few tips and working on hurting yourself. But what my job here is,
if you could see the show from backstage, it would be a totally different show, and yet just as interesting.
Just as much drama.
There are times when all of us have these changes that are literally 5 seconds. We're off and we're right back on. And that's why people come up to us afterwards and they say, "You're only three people? I thought you were like seven or eight at least." And so we're on and off. Just wanted to show. They didn't have to do that, I guess, for the first show, but this one's... Mm.
The stage assistants.
Well, what happened in the first show was that they were working just the three of them, and they didn't have any monies. They were just developing the show, and they didn't have any sponsors, so they had to develop a way in doing everything between the three of them. So they did the show, and they packed the show themselves, and that's why the first show was a little different. And then after they became famous with the first show, they decided to have the luxury of having two dressers and stage assistants. That's how it worked out. I recall a story where when the two boys were working together, they developed the show in such a way that one could run off and do the lights as the other one was on stage. But anyway, we have Fico here who might be able to answer the questions regarding the technical setup, what he does during the show. And he's our Iron Man here because he's in the theater at 8 o'clock in the morning, taking the show from scratch and setting it up. And then he runs the show himself, and then he drives the truck, and sometimes he's sane. You might want to say something, or you might have a question for him regarding what it is to have to set up a show, have to work with actors. Because it is difficult there, you know, he has to have a timing with them as well. It's something to have to work all day and then have, in a different theater, having different lights and having to be able to communicate with your performers and tell them what might be different this night than the last night.
Do you get help from stage assistants in the theaters that you are renting or in
From my stage assistants?
No, the stage assistants, for instance, in Meaning, they have their people work for Meaning.
I'll tell you, and send their text back.
shine the light?
Not originally, but they were designed by a Swiss designer photographer, very close to the original creators. But then we went on tour, and he didn't want to actually do the tour. And I did, and what's interesting, again, working with the creators, I'm going to give an example. I remember there was a time, 1.5 years ago, where the first act was the second.
First act
was the second. Just to give you an idea what happened while we were touring. So the way the show is done, so you have many numbers. They're all individual, they're not apparently linked all together. So we kept, for the longest time, we kept switching and swapping things around. And for them, they would talk about maybe in the evening while they were having dinner. But for me, it got over my program, especially it gets harder when you have to program a computer. So you lose a lot of time. My preference goes to you want to be a little more technical, to a manual light board, because I know the show, I know their timing, and they can say, okay, today's menu is a super bag before, I don't know, sausages. Okay, fine. This is just the names of the numbers. They don't have to know what the super bag means. Just to give so. But if I have to, the computer, I have a sequence to write or create. My background was I started as tourist and in acting in Italy, I'm Italian. I always speak my English for two reasons. Yeah. One, I'm sleeping. Second, because in fact I'm a foreigner. While I was playing and doing something like the thing I was asked to do, just do two bits of the show, go backstage into the lights, and I said that's it, but I mean, I'll be happy to come and see if I can make it. So it was 4 days, no sleep, and the fifth night, here I am, and we're in the light with the, of course, the guy who was supposed to leave, standing behind me, and he said, okay, do it as if I wasn't there, and the show went not well, and he left.
Problems with the language barrier when you go from country to country and you're trying to work out technical problems or, you know.
Especially about the mask
or the creator created everything.
In the beginning.
Well, seriously, in the 4 years that they were developing the show, they would often, of course, have their ideas or try to work on them, and one of them would go out and buy a can of tuna fish, and she would get a plastic bag. And this plastic she never felt before. She thought, well, maybe that plastic would work better than the plastic they were using. And it just worked like that. And after 4 years of testing different fabrics and materials, they were able to come up with what you see tonight if you come tonight. But to answer your question, they developed the choreography, they bought the materials, they made the costumes, they worked on the lights, they really did everything. As well as the first show. All costumes, they make the costumes themselves. Now we have people that they hire. Lee is repairing the costumes. But they developed everything, yes.
How much improvisation is within the performance that you do now?
Well, not a great deal. The nature of the costumes. Well, the show gets adjustments made because of reactions to the audience and reactions to the space and reactions to our own mood. But as far as the movements are concerned, they're set. Occasionally, they're part of Mummenschanz, the chance of it is that with some of these materials, you never know exactly what they're going to do or where they're going to land. Or, I mean, sometimes they're in the air, they come down at different places. We have a couple of costumes that get blown up. Occasionally they get holes in them. And you do a lot of improvisation when something like that goes amiss. You know, there's a lot of, and with all the manipulation, you know, there's always an element of chance going on with the manipulation of the costumes, and then some improvisation has to happen.
But it's all related to the costumes. Like, we wouldn't go out and say, oh, they're really reacting, let's change the choreography.
Yeah, we wouldn't do a 5 minute we wouldn't do a 5 minute Lotsy because a piece was happened to be
it's
really
working.
It's
only because of what the costume might say to us while we're on stage performing the costume. If it dictates something, then we have to change the choreography.
One time we have these pillows with these bean beads in them, you know, these styrofoam beads, and it broke on stage. I don't recall what happened, but it's wonderful when something like that happens, how the stage manager might react to the performance.
Well, the stage manager reacted, oh my god.
This is the original company.
Opening night in New York. And then I had to try to organize a big
I do my first entrance.
5 seconds.
I do my first entrance from the house, and that's improv with the people for like 30 seconds or something at the top of the show. So that's improvisation. Although you also get to learn things that work and things that don't.
We can't see them, but what are your faces doing? Are you reacting? I mean, what are your faces doing behind the masks?
Wedding.
But do you have expressions on them?
Mine
are just going through emotions, broke, I mean, concentrating on doing emotions. Have you got a look of intense concentration? Or do you know you react? Does your face also react?
It started I remember at the audition, when we didn't have goggles, there were these hoods we wear over our faces because we wear the mask on top of our head. And as during the audition, they were saying, don't use your face, don't use your face. They said, and it's really hard because your face isn't covered. So,
probably my agent.
So your face would want to react. If you wanted something and you would do things like this, or you know, if you were sad, your face would get sad and said no. They go direct all of your energy up into the mask and then let that speak, and then your body will go with it. It will all filter through the mask. And so after a while, I mean, when I was doing the slinky, I remember I'm inside this big tubing thing, and I'd be in there making all kinds of faces. But now, I mean, you know, some of them of like, oh, you know, like this, but others of like that, and you'd be doing, you know, things under there. But now, I don't make so many faces anymore. but occasionally I do catch myself, you know, making faces here or there. But you try to have your body make your faces for you, because the mask doesn't change unless you change it. Some of them we can change. Some of them are unchangeable. So your body has to make the expression of the mask.
And particularly in the first act, which is mostly non-human and very much larger masks that cover the whole body. A constant note that I was getting was, and I think all of us, was to fill the mask so that you're projecting, and you're imagining yourself as big as whatever you're underneath. That you're getting, you know, you're not just a human being. And then in the second act, we wear these body suits, so that when we put our heads up here, it looks proportionally correct. So again, there you have to fight through about, you know, 4 inches of styrofoam to be able to look normal. I mean, if you just go like this, you're going to be swallowed by your body mask, whereas if you go like this and really play all the way out, then you'll reach the back.
We have time to catch the ball.
It's a secret.
That's the old show, and that's the secret. Oh. No, it's a vacuum effect.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you do any of the stuff really old from the old show, or are those masks in the Mom and Sean's Hall of Fame?
They're in a storage room. They're in a storage room in New York, and
do you ever pull those out?
They did, in fact, just before we went on tour. Some of the people that did the old show came back and did those clay masks. I don't know if you've seen those.
Yeah, I saw the show on
the 80. They did all this, and they reworked that and did this. And the slinky, which is now in this show, is sort of a product of the slinky in the old show, which was just one tube, and now it's
more.
Five.
More tubes.
It's something that won't go on tour.
Yeah.
They pulled it out to do a United Nations film, or they'll do an AT&T commercial. That's when they might use these things, but they will never take the old costumes and use it for the show.
But some of them sort of things from the old show spurred their imagination to take it a step further, and that's what you'll see sort of in the show. Some of them.
Go, quick one.
Okay. What's the single most difficult thing that you encounter taking a show like this on the road from stage to stage from city to city?
I think it's going to change depending on how long we're doing it. At some point, it's going to be not getting on each other's nerves. At another point, it's not going to be getting bored. Right now, I find the most difficult thing is adjusting to the different theaters. But then we've only been on tour a couple of weeks. You know, after a month or two, it'll be real easy.
How many performances are you going to do in the year?
We could probably figure 30 weeks a year at an average of 5 or 6 a week. How many different countries? Most of Europe, the United States, and 3 countries in Asia that we know of now. Four countries in Asia that we know of, as of now.
That's Larry's favorite expression. Anytime we ask him a question, it's all, well, as of now, because things change.
The most difficult thing for me about changing theaters or going on the road is making sure that the equipment gets there. We have a lot of equipment.
You know where our equipment was 24 hours ago? It was in the Portland Airport.
And for people. And West.
And Seattle was fogged in 2 days ago. We came in. We had to wait 4 hours in the airport, first of all.
Four.
All us.
Six.
Six.
6 hours in the Sacramento Airport.
And then, the two of them had even been smart enough to take, we finished the show in Sacramento, say. So Larry and Kiko take the stuff to cargo that night, thinking, okay, we're smart, we'll get it to Seattle tomorrow morning and it'll be there when we get there. Well, we get to the airport in the morning and Seattle's fogged in, so we have to wait all day to go to Seattle. Then we finally get here and the cargo is
in port.
It's been rerouted. So, I mean, it's a good thing we didn't have a show yesterday because it would have been kind of tricky.
that's a whole nother story.
Yeah. We're going to have to come to a stop because these people have to go eat before they have a performance tonight, and I'd like to thank them. Would it be possible for those who want to stay just to do a quick walk backstage and see what it looks like set up? Quick walk?
Well, you can, but I don't think you want to.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the show yet, to go back and see what they look like beforehand is going to lessen some of the magic of it, I think. But I guess if you're into the technical stuff. Yeah, if you're into it. If you're into it, then yeah.
But there's one rule that we ask.
Yeah.
No touching.
If you see plastic, don't. Yeah, it's not a garbage bag.
Yeah. So if you'd like to do that, just a quick kind of file through it. And Tom's file?
And it all, yeah. Thank you.